You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com Podcast Network.
All right, huddle up, huddle up. We're going to crank these engines up on one, all right? Wait, set. Drivers, start your engines.
This is the finish line.
I coached some great offensive linemen in the past. Larry Little, Dwight Stevenson, Jim Langer, all Hall of Famers, and Richmond Webb belongs in that same group.
Here are your hosts, legendary Miami Dolphins left tackle Richmond Webb, Reason, and Mr. Ballgame.
Welcome back, Dolphins Talk Nation, to another episode of The Finish Line. As always, I'm your host, Reason, and I'm joined by my other hosts, Mr. Ballgame and Richmond Webb. You can follow all of us on the tweet box. You can follow Richmond Webb at Richmond Webb. You can follow Mr. Ballgame at KCTSR. And you can follow myself at the underscore real underscore reason. Gentlemen, we are recording this on a Thursday night when football is officially back on our television screens, and we are only a mere 3 days away from the debut of the hopefully new look offense in Miami and of Miami's and the start to Miami season with a 4:25 kickoff in New England. How you guys feeling? Getting giddier by the night?
I'm glad football is back. I feel good. Like you said, Cowboys and Buccaneers are playing tonight. So going to watch a little bit of that game, but definitely looking forward to Sunday afternoon. And no better way to start out. No better way to start out than going against a division rival like the New England Patriots. And I'm sure that game is going to be hyped up. You got Flores versus his mentor Belichick. And then you got the two former Alabama quarterbacks, you know, Tua versus Mac Jones. Of course, it's more than that, but the way the media spin it is, you know, quarterback versus, you know, the Miami versus New England Patriots. But I'm happy it's back. Glad to be back on the show with you guys. I always look forward to this during this time of week, and just ready to go and happy football is back. How you doing, Mr. Ballgame?
It's time! We are here, fellas. How y'all doing, man? I'm hype, bro. Like, this it. Best time of the year. You know what I'm saying? Cats get out there running around, trying to knock the snot out of each other. You know what I mean? It's going to be a good time this year, man. I think we're going to be in for some special things from Tua Tagovailoa, man. I'm just anxious to see how we go out there and dismantle New England on Sunday and set the tone early in the season. You know? Thursday night game, you know what I'm saying? That got other guys out of our division. Happy to have that happening for us. We got to worry about him until maybe the Super Bowl or whatnot. And then watch the Buccaneers dismantle these Cowboys a little bit later, you know what I'm saying? So it's all good. It's a great time of the year. So
yeah, it's the most wonderful time of the year. So let's get right into it. The Dolphins obviously are starting off with the New England Patriots, and with that, Mac Jones is a starter. So it'll be Mac. It'll be the prodigy versus the mentor a little bit here, where Mac Jones up against Tua Tagovailoa. Obviously, that's one of the biggest talking points of this matchup that we have coming up between these two teams. we'll start with you, Ballgame. On the defensive side of the football, obviously stopping the run is going to be key. Creating turnovers is going to be key. Confusing Mac Jones with disguises, exotic packages, and different looks pre-snap as opposed to post-snap is going to be key. You know, running off, stopping the run, putting the game into Mac Jones's hand So making Mac Jones have to be the one to beat you is going to be key. How do you defensively, how do you see this game unfolding for the Dolphins against their offense and their actual pretty good offensive line when you break it down?
I think the key thing to remember or the focus that they're going to go into Sunday's game with is, like you said, stopping the run. I think if they can get that established early in the game, then that puts basically Mac in a really bad space. And I'm not saying they have to go out and completely just shut down their run, but stop 4 or 5 yard carries, make that 2 yards, you know what I'm saying, 3 yards, and then make third down a little bit longer, and then do what we have to do. I don't think they have to get too, you know what I'm saying, exotic against Mac Jones. You know what I mean? I think if they walk up, they do the amoeba, they walk up to the line, they put the llamas up front and just let everybody line up across the, you know what I'm saying, make the receivers beat the guys on the outside and then make it look like everybody's coming. Somebody going to get there because somebody going to miss an assignment. You only got 5 blockers. You're going to have to keep a running back in. Chances are they're going to be able to leak a tight end out of the West. So they're going to have 2, at best 3 receivers in pass coverage, and that's what you want, because then at that point, you got an extra guy. You know what I'm saying? You got a safety that can lurk and roam around and do certain things for you. I don't think you have to do much to confuse this kid, to be truthful with you, and I don't think they're going to try to be too sexy over the top. They're just going to put their ears back and go get him. And then let everything fall as it will. You know what I'm saying? As long as we stop the run, I think we're going to be fine in putting him in those third down and long situations. And on the flip side, our offense against their defense, and then it just keeps getting better for us because they just keep taking losses in the secondary. You know, they're going to be down to essentially backups. You know what I mean? True backups against our starting wide receivers. So, that bodes well for us. You know what I'm saying? As long as Tua can get the ball out in a timely fashion, I think we can definitely dictate the tempo on offense, which keeps our defense fresh, have them out there longer, wearing their defense down. As long as Mac Jones ain't on the field, he ain't ever get any type of rhythm. And as long as they playing from behind, we winning. So I think it's going to be a really good time. We catching them at the right time. You know what I'm saying? Injuries happen in the game, things of that nature. We just happen to be the healthier team, I believe, right now. And I think that matters a lot in terms of our success against them early. So,
you look at this team offensively, Richmond. Obviously, the big talk heading in is how the offensive line is going to look. I mean, Austin Jackson is potentially out, and it could be Greg Little stepping in, or it could even be Liam Eichenberg with stepping in at left tackle with Jesse Davis staying at right tackle. You know, their defense, especially their front seven, is, you know, nothing to kind of shake a stick at here. I mean, you got Devon Godshaw. It's a bit of a revenge game for him. You got Lawrence Guy, Chase Vinovich, Dietrich Wise, Matt Judon, Dante Hightower, Kyle Van Noy. When you look at this game offensively, obviously on the flip side of stopping the run, we're going to have to establish the run. We're going to have to keep Tua clean. What other things are you looking for the offense to be effective against the New England Patriots defense?
It's always definitely a plus if you can get the running game going or be consistent with it, you know, picking up, you know, about 4 yards of carries. Now, if we get that going, along with some quick passing, spread them out, especially if we're trying to run the ball and they really tighten down their front seven to kind of force us into passing situations, which I don't think that would be a smart idea. If we can get the running game going, it's really going to open up some things because now you're a two-way threat. You can run the ball, then you can throw the football, and now they can't make you one-dimensional. So I'm sure they're going to probably try to throw some things at Tua. And especially, like you're saying, with Jackson being out this now, I'm sure they recognize that and maybe try to, you know, do some things to try to get pressure from that side or whatever. Since Tua's a left-handed quarterback, I can see Belichick probably blitzing Tua to force him to his right versus let him go left. Because knowing him, he's probably broken down. He's probably a more accurate passer, he gets outside the pocket to the left versus the right, since he's left-handed. So you got to think about all those little things with Belichick. He just studies film, this and that. So he's going to try to put him in the toughest position possible, because I think he knows on the opposite end that, you know, Mac Jones is a rookie. He knows our defense. And like Ballgame said, you know, if they start walking safeties up and moving linebackers and making it look like we're going to blitz, that's a lot of pressure on Mac Jones, and having to adjust on the fly to stuff like that. You know, you might check out of a play and then they back out and go back into, you know, space coverage. It could, if they get him rattled and confused, it could be a long day for the Patriots. So I agree with Ballgame. I think on that side of the ball, I think they're going to try to get the running game going, because they don't want to put that young quarterback in a situation where he's got to consistently drop back and throw the football against our defense. That would be ideal for us, but I'm just hoping that we get everything going consistently, move the ball, let Tua do the RPO, the new offense we got installed, let him hit the different receivers, and just slowly, gradually wear that defense down, and then we'll start to pull away from him. So that's what I'm looking at for Sunday.
You know, I've thought about this. I talked about this a little bit yesterday on Finside the NFL, the YouTube podcast. You know, I find it odd that, and more than a coincidence, that, you know, a couple weeks ago they shut practice down. It was supposed to be the last public practice, was actually supposed to be on a Friday. But then on the Thursday they announced that they were going to be going indoors so fans wouldn't be able to attend. And then all of a sudden, you know, everyone was healthy, right? And all of the weapons were back to full health, and clearly they wanted to start really putting in the real installs, the stuff they're going to be doing this Sunday, not a lot of the vanilla stuff they put on tape. And, you know, I thought about it even further. I'm like, you know, if you think about it, they haven't given Bill Belichick much. They gave him the vanilla offense, but not only that, they didn't show him at all how Will Fuller's going to be used, how Devontae Parker's going to be used this year with Jaylen Waddle in the mix, how Albert Wilson's going to be used, because there's talks about him working on the boundary, not just in the slot this season. And, you know, I've got a real feeling that you're going to see them come out on Sunday, and I think they're going to try to go over the top of them right out of the gate. I think they're going to try and shell shock them and be explosive right out of the gate, and then they're going to beat them with that death by a thousand cuts, that RPO quick rhythmic offense where you're getting small chunks, small chunks, small chunks, small chunks, but just enough where you're basically, it's like you're running the ball the whole game, and just keep the ball away from them. Because if you go up 14-0 on Mac Jones, you really put the pressure on that Patriots offense. They just can't sit back and feed Ramondre Stevenson and Damian Harris if you go up big and early on them. And I know this is kind of far-fetched because we're talking about the Patriots here, but do you think what I'm saying is that far out of the realm of possibility?
I don't. I think the biggest thing is that with the offense that we are anticipating them installing and using this year, it plays to our advantage, because if you think about it, the strength of the Patriots is all in that D-line and outside stand-up linebacker position. And if you can get those guys having to go sideline to sideline, you know what I'm saying, for 8 yards here, 7 yards there, and they got to run and rally all game long to do that, that wears them down as well. So serves two purposes. And I just don't see how, you know, I mean, Hightower's an amazing player, but he's not built to sideline to sideline all game. That's just not him. You know what I mean? His strength is when you're trying to come downhill at him. You know what I mean? That's him, Vinoy, Matt Judon. All those guys are big, bulky guys that sideline, they're gonna struggle against his RPO. I think another thing is that, you know, if we can successfully prove to them, you know what I'm saying, out the gate that we're willing to take the shots and connect on the deep shots, then they have to play us differently at that point, because their secondary is kind of depleted. You know what I mean? To a point where if they don't come out in the first series and at least try to go up top at least once a series, then we're doing ourselves a disservice, because we got the speed to do it. You got the guys to get behind, because J.C. Jackson can't be everywhere, and he's their best corner. right now at this point with Gilmore out and the safeties are banged up. You know, and Mills, I don't know why they signed that guy, but like, you know what I mean? J.C. Jackson's really all they got, you know what I mean? So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. I just hope that, you know, I think it's Godsey, right? Godsey's the guy.
That's what Belichick said was the play caller.
Yeah, so.
What do you think, Richmond, about – do you think it's going to be imperative about getting off to a quick and fast start and not a lot of three and outs?
Yeah, I think you kind of gave away the game plan without giving it away. I mean, you look at Flores with him being working for Bill Belichick for 15 years. He knows how he prepares for the season, for game one, for each game. For 15 years, he's worked on that staff. So the first thing you want to do is not give him any type of idea of some of the plays that you're going to do. And I think that's why even during the preseason, you know, we had a real conservative offense. And I remember people on Twitter, we need to do this, we need to do that. You don't show that in preseason. You wait and say that for the game. But definitely if we go deep, even if we don't connect, it's going to force them to play honest and just say, they're definitely keep the safeties back because with, you got Speed, Fuller, Waddle, Wilson, those guys running 4-2, 4-3. The last thing you do is put a corner on the island and he misses a jam or whatever, and that guy gets on the top of him. You know, that's an easy 6 point. And we've seen Tua throw the deep ball too many times. So I definitely think that's a concern. And I think he's definitely going to be guessing, but that'll loosen it up. And also the point you brought up about Hightower, Van Noy, those guys, those are bigger linebackers. And they're not going to be trying to run and keep up with those small guys. That'll wear them out quick. And once your defense get tired, I don't care how good they are, it's downhill from there because they never recover. And that's when you really start seeing the big offensive play. So I think that would be great. I'm glad that he, you know, pulled the team inside and saying, you know, this is the last one and start working on New England. You know, the preseason games, that's what we would do. We wouldn't really concern about it. You want to go out and get your snaps, your execution, your time and this and that, but you wasn't worried about going 3-0 or 4-0 in the preseason. You're just working on getting that and getting prepared for the game one, and especially against a divisional rivalry. You know, those games count 2-for-1. You want to have the best record in the division and in overall record. So this is a very important game starting out, and you want to start out on the right foot.
They averaged 146.6 yards on the ground last year as an offense. They really killed the Dolphins in week one with that read option with Cam Newton. That is no longer, you know, the read option is no longer an option with Mac Jones now. Ballgame, how important is it to, you know, I listed it as one of the things you got to do, but how important is it to stop the run early?
That's the number one. That's the number one concern. That should be the number one priority right now. You definitely, I mean, you'd have to be stuck under a rock for the last 10 years to not know that New England consistently falls in the top 10 every year for run offense. And they do it just as good as anybody, and they're going to stick to it. Even they run the ball even on downs where you would think, well, most teams, 95% of most teams in the league will be throwing the ball for the first down. They run the ball. So we have to mentally, the Dolphins have to be prepared for that. You know what I'm saying? You have to tell yourself weeks in advance, like, okay, New England's coming. I got to put my big boy pants on. It's going to be dirty. It's going to be gritty. They're going to be doing a whole lot of holding, and it's going to be nasty down there in them trenches. But we just got to win. You know what I'm saying? And we can stop the run, right? That puts all the pressure on the shoulders of that young quarterback, and that's what you want. You want him back there having to decide how to decipher and – you know what I'm saying, dissect this defense, which I just don't believe he has the skill set to do. So, yes, the primary focus is stop the run this week.
So what are you guys' predictions for this week? I'm predicting a 27-17 Dolphins victory, even though on Twitter I got a lot of Patriots fans in their feelings when I said that it was going to be 30-13 and Tua was going to throw for 350-plus yards and 4 touchdowns. They got real in their feelings. I also think, you know, I think three interceptions is a possibility. Like Javon Holland, Xavier Howard, and Byron Jones. What are you guys' predictions going into? We'll start with you, Richmond. What's your prediction for this Sunday?
I'm thinking 24-17, somewhere in there. Dolphins probably could squeeze out another 3 or 7 points. It just depends. If they shut that run down really early, this game could get ugly, especially if our offense gets rolling. So, but I'm thinking right now, 24-17, maybe, like you said, 27 or 30. And I'm sure you went back and apologized to all those Patriots fans after you offended him.
Nope. I acted like they didn't exist. Ball game, what's your prediction?
On my sheet, I had 27. I think I had 28-14, but I'm thinking more along the lines of 27-10 now. Because I don't think they're going to actually be able to score many points past maybe a lucky touchdown late and a field goal probably somewhere in the first half. I just don't – you know, with all of these injuries racking up and people they're going to be missing on Sunday, I just don't see how they're going to be able to stack up against us. You know, even if we do marginally against the run, they still got to at some point put the ball into Mac Jones' hand. They're not going to be able to run the ball the whole game on us. I just don't think that success we had down the stretch last year in the last six games of the season, I think that carries over. They remember how to work together up front to stop the run, and I just don't see them being able to get a lot of momentum going, to be truthful. So I'm going to say 27-10.
All right, so beyond the Patriots game, obviously we're about to head into the regular season here. Myself and Richmond have the Dolphins with 11-6 record. Ball game, you have them going 12-5. I have them losing. Me and Ball game have them losing at home to the Bills in Week 2. Me and Ball game also have them losing to the Colts and to the Buccaneers. I have them losing the Halloween game against the Bills. And then all three of us have them losing the Thursday night game against the Ravens, though. The way the Ravens injuries are piling up, we might have to change that one.
Yeah.
Richmond has the Dolphins losing to the Saints. And then I have we all have them losing to Tennessee. So really you've got five. Me and Richmond got six losses. Ball game.
Yes, sir.
What's your outlook for this regular season 12-5 record? What do you think the magic number for getting into the playoffs is going to be? 11?
I think we're at it. Yeah, I think if it's 11, I think it's going to be based on if they win 11 and they get in at 11, it's going to be based on a push that somebody else screwed up on their end. I think 12 solidifies them. There's no question at that point that they're in regardless. It's just a matter of at that point between us and maybe Buffalo. I mean, and people are anticipating Buffalo being the champion of the AFC East, but hell, they could fall off too. You never know. But I think winning 12 definitely gets you in, you know what I mean, in my opinion, because I don't see too many teams in the AFC going 15-2, 14-3. You know what I'm saying? There'd be a lot of them at 13-4, 12-5, but that should be because there's, to be honest with you, there's only, in my opinion, two teams that are just like, now I wouldn't say majorly out in front of everyone, but the rest of the pack is pretty condensed when you think about the Browns and the Ravens and Steelers and us. And, you know, I think we're all right there in the same category of talent. You see what I'm saying? But the Chiefs have proven that until you beat them, they're the best team in the AFC right now. And then Buffalo had a shot last year, blew it. So the game starts all over, and Buffalo's not that much further, in my opinion, ahead of everyone. But you have to give them, you know, they finished as the number two team in the AFC last year. So until somebody else knocks them out of that position, that's where they are. And we finished right outside the playoffs. So like I said, that whole grouping of everybody after Kansas City and Buffalo, I think they're fairly close. So 12 wins for me solidifies it, I think. You know,
what are some key things you're going to be watching with the Dolphins? I know when we talked about second-year leap players besides Tua, I had mentioned I expect the biggest second-year leap from Raekwon Davis. You had mentioned Brandon Jones.
Yeah.
So, like, okay, obviously, you know, the growth and development of Javon Holland, how this run defense looks this year. Are you interested in seeing how, because they kept a lot of the same guys, if the second level of the defense takes a step forward? Like, what are some of the things you'll be looking at this year?
Well, the thing for me, the number one thing for me is the continuity, keeping the continuity that they had up front, that they had in the last six games of the season against the run, where they were actually up there eating up the blocks so that the linebackers actually had an opportunity to play free. You know, if they can continue to do that, they can get off to a good start doing that, and I do believe that the second level – you know, for the linebackers can be a lot more successful. But, you know, it's just like anything else. Run defense is all about your D-line. If your D-line can't get the job done, the O-line is going to be right in the laps of the linebackers, and then you're playing catch-up. So, you know, as long as those guys up front, you know what I'm saying, work together and there's no one up there trying to play hero ball, we should be fine. And if they continue the trend, like I said, that they had going the last six games of the season, We should be good, but that's my focus this year. I'm not worried about the secondary. I'm worried about that front. You know, that's the front seven group, and they all have to play together, right? So Raekwon has to do the dirty work of, you know, the double teams. Christian's gonna have to take and own his one on one responsibility just as much as Ogba is at times. Gonna probably have to eat a double team here and there. Both of those guys, truthfully, they gotta sacrifice themselves for the greater good of the linebacker core, because we are small, we're fast, but we're small at linebacker, so they're definitely gonna have to eat up a lot of blocks up front, and that's what I'm gonna be looking. That's what I'm gonna be focused on, looking at to see how well those guys take to that job, because it's a dirty job, but that's what they get paid the, you know, that's what they get paid the money to do. So,
On the flip side of it, Richmond, what are some of the things you're gonna be watching for offensively? You know, obviously the offensive line, we want to see who takes how big of a step forward in their second year. Jesse Davis has been battling an injury all preseason. Is that eventually going to catch up to him? You know, the wide receiver core, as much as we've added all this talent, a lot of, you know, a lot of our main guys here, they're fragilia, you know what I mean? And then the Adam Shaheen COVID thing continues. You know, second time having COVID, the question has been running rampant of, is, you know, is this guy going to be detrimental to the team in the long run? And should you cut him? I mean, what are some of the offensive storylines you're going to be watching? And obviously Tua, what are some of the offensive storylines you're going to be watching closely this year?
Well, I think we talked about it the other day. What I'm looking at is the offensive line as a group to take that leap. And, like, you know, said earlier, you know, Jackson might not be available for this game, but if he's not available, a guy like Little or Eichenberg has got to step up, and they got to play better. And especially with Tua showing the way he's getting the ball out quicker, his body is, he's fully rehabbed. We saw how he can throw the ball. He's got zip on it, all that. And I just don't want everybody just coming to say, if the Dolphins lose, it's Tua's fault. You got to be able to evaluate it. Everything starts up front. So the offensive line has got to win. The defensive line is going to. If we don't win, then I'm not saying he can't get it out, but he might have to hurry some passes to get it out. Yeah, we have plenty of weapons at wide receiver, this and that. If we can get the ball to him, you know, truly give him an opportunity to showcase what he can do and maximize the potential and the talent we have at those positions, and it's going to be working well for us. So that's definitely what I'm going to be paying attention to. And I think 11-6, I think last year it was 10-6. If you don't make it in, you're borderline. And that was that number. And we lost that last game. And you know, we're basically out. We was in it until that last game. So I think that's, you know, 11 wins is the key. And long as you get those 11, you got a legitimate shot of getting in there. You got four division winners, and I'm sure it's going to be a couple people battling this and that. They might lose. A division winner can go from being a wild card with a loss. But I think 11-6 is that sweet spot that I think we need to try to achieve to actually make it into the playoffs.
Let me ask you this, Richmond. Austin Jackson might miss this game because of COVID. Greg Little, you know, it's like that Spider-Man meme where one Spider-Man's looking at the other one, they're the same guy, right? And, you know, if Austin Jackson misses this game, whether Eichenberg gets started there, you know, I mean, hey, crazy thought, trying the left tackle you drafted in the second round at the position he played so well at in college. Crazy, huh? Okay, and when you got an injury, right? And, okay, if Eichenberg or Little gets in there and they give you more consistency and a better performance, could this long-term be – could this lead towards the end of Austin Jackson at left tackle? Not with the Dolphins all in general, but at left tackle, could – consistent good play from one of those two guys if they have to step in on Sunday, could that create a serious positional battle, or is it going to be, as Jay-Z once said, politics as usual? With him being an 18th overall pick, no one will be willing to put their hand up and say we're not sitting him for a second round guy or a guy we traded a seventh round pick for.
Well, the thing I think I look at, and I think Flores and Chris Greer look at, if somebody goes over there and really plays well and solidifies that left side or whatever, I think you got to examine that. And I'm not saying you bench Jackson, but maybe he may have to move to right. You know what I'm saying? Once you find a good fit and you get that fixed, that's one less thing you got to worry about. And that's why they've been signing different guys, trying to fix the tackle position. So if Little or Eichenberg get in there and really do a solid job and they like what they're doing, I could see possibly saying, okay, at least we got this half for the line fixed. Let's go over here and see if we can fix the right tackle. It just makes everything run smoother for the longer term, because at the end of the day, it's about team first and then the individual. And, you know, if your feelings are hurt or whatever like that, step your game up and say, okay, I might not be at this position, but at least I'm going to be on the field somewhere. So you got to have that dog mentality to say, you know, no matter what, I'm going to be one of those five spots up there is mine. So I understand about COVID, and that might open up the door for somebody else. But if it opens up that door, you got to say, okay, I got to go somewhere and find, because I need to be on the field. If you have that mentality and make you want to work harder and this and that, because that's just the way you gotta view it. If you look at it any other way or sit back and pout or whatever, you're not gonna get better. That's not you gotta fight for it. So but knowing them, I think if that makes sense and that really solidifies, I think you take a hard look at it and say, well, hey, let's leave this. It looks really good. I like what we're getting from it. I like the production, this and that. We got this side set, let's work on the other side.
What do you think, Ballgame, about Austin Jackson potentially missing this game with COVID and Liam Eichenberg or Greg Little getting the chance?
Listen, it's all opportunities, man. I think the one thing that as a coach that I used to keep as a rule for myself was that a guy couldn't lose his position to injury, right? But this ain't an injury, this COVID. So, and they haven't started the game, they haven't started the season yet, so it's a temporary position. Temporary position, in my opinion, that they put Austin Jackson in anyway. We're just probably waiting on somebody else to come along and take it, to be truthful. But if it happens and you get continuity, and you know what I'm saying, you get better play from somebody else stepping up to do the job, then it's a win-win, right? Because then at that point, you still got a number 18 overall pick on your squad that, like Richmond said, could possibly be moved somewhere else. And you don't necessarily want – most people don't really want, Davis there, so maybe Jackson could slide over to the right side and be better, you know. I think it's a win-win because these guys are so young, right? And then Eichenberg has always been a left tackle anyway and did a really good job of it in college. So if he goes in there, he's kind of light, but if he goes in there and holds his own, then yeah, I think you do look at, you know what I'm saying, reshuffling a little bit, because at the end of the day, like Richmond says also, and we all say, it's what's best for the team. Right.
Who do you guys think emerges as the lead back, Gaskin or Salvin Ahmed by the time this is all said and done.
Ahmed.
Even for with me, his deficiency in blocking?
Yeah, I just think though he offers more oomph. You know what I mean? There's more to him when he touches the ball. That first step of his is something Gaskins doesn't have. You know what I mean? And his top end speed is something different too. Like, he's faster than Gaskin. And the blocking thing, I get, but like, if I want to hand the ball off to one of these two dudes and I need a sure 4 or 5 yards downhill going or to get to the edge, I'm gonna rely on Ahmed's quickness and fastness over Gaskins. I mean, it's like night and day in terms of how much faster he is than that guy. So,
yeah,
that's my opinion. But
all right, guys, you got any final thoughts before we get out of here? Richmond, start with you.
I'm just happy football is back, and
you want to give your final thoughts the time where we talk about Tua and the captaincy, if you'd like.
I've been both ways where normally the quarterback is the captain. And then I think when Jimmy Johnson got there, I think he kind of picked captains every week or whatever, rotated. But even when Dan was a captain, normally captains would go out for the coin toss, this and that. And a lot of time Dan would rather be on the sideline warming up, throwing, getting ready for the game. So sometimes, even though he was a captain, he'd go out. But typically you look at your captain when you get that C on your jersey or whatever. You know, you're the leader on offense or whatever, and you only have two guys on offense, maybe two guys on defense. And even though he wasn't named a starter, the way he has been facilitating, helping guys, making sure they understand the routes and this and that, he's in a leadership role. So just because he isn't named the captain, the type of guy Tua is, he's still going to continue to be perceived as a captain. This just normally a leadership role on offense. You got to take control, and he's done that. And I think guys see the way his work ethic was this offseason, the way he carries himself. He doesn't really throw guys under the bus, this and that. And those are all true characters of a leader. I think they view him as that. So even though he wasn't named as a captain, I think everybody in the locker room respects that young man. And he'll still be like a captain, even though he don't have the official title as captain.
I like what he said. He said, I don't care about them C, I care about W's. So, fact of the matter is, it don't matter who they deem as a captain. He still, his job doesn't change. His job is to go out there and lead the offense. So, you know, W's are what he's worried about more than C's. So, I didn't put much stock into it. I'm glad he don't have to worry about that. He just go out there and be free and play. So,
mm-hmm.
For me,
yeah, anyway. I'm not really putting a ton of stock into it. It is what it is. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, this was voted on upon the team. They don't even know if Tua put his name, because you had to put your name in
the name in the hat,
and they don't even know if Tua did that. So right. I'm not going to sit here and get way out of bounds here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're not gonna do like a lot of other people have done.
No, it's ridiculous how people are kind of making a big deal out of it. You know, like, it is what it is. I mean, let's be honest with ourselves. Is him having a C on his chest really affecting how all of us think he's going to end up playing this year or whatever? Yep. No.
Not at all.
I mean, give me a break a little bit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. All right, guys, we'll be back next week, and we will review, hopefully, a victory over the Patriots for the Dolphins, and then we'll get into the preview of the big Week 2 matchup between the Buffalo Bills and the Miami Dolphins. Until next time, we will see you right here back at the finish line.